This episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Mixtape Massacre, the ultimate horror board game. Mixtape Massacre is a tabletop board game where up to six players play as horror film archetypes and compete in a fictional 1986 killing spree to be remembered. With tons of references to all your favorite 1980s music and pop culture, Mixtape Massacre will have you laughing while you're slashing. After being sold out for a second time, Mixtape Massacre is back in stock in its third printing. The Shockwaves team loves this game, and it is guaranteed good time for your next game night. To purchase, visit mixtapemassacre.com and have a killer good time. Want more? The Black Mask expansion pack will arrive this May, adding more cards, slashes, victims, and gameplay to the mix. Visit mixtapemassacre.com for more.
Today's episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Diabolik DVD. Check them out online at www.diabolikdvd.com. They are the number one source for horror, cult, and strange films from around the world. The company is movie buff owned and operated. If you're looking for rare, unique, and strange films, then you need to head over to diabolikdvd.com. They are constantly updating their inventory, and they have plenty of movies that you won't find anywhere else. They revamped their website earlier this year, so ordering has never been easier. Some of their latest titles include the Blu-ray of Liquid Sky from Vinegar Syndrome, the new 7-disc Darkman Collector's Edition, the Emmanuel Last of the Cannibals Blu-ray just released from Severin Films, the amazing new limited edition Blu-ray of Deep Red from Arrow Films, also from Arrow Video, the new Blu-ray of Basket Case, the new Blu-ray of Spasms from Code Red, and the new amazing Blu-ray DVD combo of Disconnected from Vinegar Syndrome. They have all of the latest titles from Agfa, Code Red, Scorpion, and more. The Shockwaves team loves them, so head over to Diabolik DVD now, www.diabolikdvd.com, or find them on Facebook.
Welcome to the Shockwaves Podcast Overlook Edition. My name is Ryan Turek. I'm one of the co-hosts of Shockwaves, as well as the VP of Development over at Blumhouse Productions. I usually run this show with Rebecca McKendry and Elric Kane and Rob Galuzzo. We've been doing it for quite a while now. I think we're about 93 episodes deep, with the 100th episode coming up soon. And when the Overlook came up, only I was able to get out here, so you get 1/4. Hopefully it's your favorite 1/4. No offense to the gang, I love them. And I like to give them shit too. But if you guys haven't tuned in, we have a pretty great episode right now from the Chattanooga Film Festival, in which we have guest host Joe Bob Briggs joining us. So you can download that now on Spotify and iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and anywhere else. I see Michael Lerman creeping in the back. Let me introduce Michael Lerman, one of the programmers here at Overlook. Hey. Let's give a round of applause.
I was going to introduce you, but I guess you're going.
I'll just introduce you, man. Come on up here.
All right.
Michael has been doing some stellar work with Landon, putting this festival together, so I just want to thank you. Anything you'd like to say before we officially start?
I mean, I want to thank Ryan Turk for being here as one of the co-hosts of the Shockwaves podcast, and I want to thank IFC Midnight, who's the official sponsor of the whole festival, and they've been amazing. I also want to thank our staff and volunteers who've been incredible. Can we get a round of applause for them? Other than that, enjoy this. This is being live taped for the actual podcast, so you're all making history here.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Thanks, buddy.
And how many listeners of Shockwaves are out there? Raise a hand. Oh, right on. Wow. See, I completely underestimate our listenership. I never know if anybody listens to our ramblings. And let me just quickly ask you, do you like our interviews? You love the guests that we have on and all stuff? Great, because there's more, a lot more of that coming up. All right, I've got three great guests here with us today. And they all have participation in the fest because we've got films here. To my left, I have the incomparable, amazing Barbara Crampton. Of course, we always wanted to have you on, so we're gonna have to do like a solo episode at some point.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Next to her, I've got Jen Wexler, who's making her feature directorial debut with The Ranger. The Ranger also debuted at South by Southwest, where I saw it. And then next to her, we've got Owen, the man Edgerton, who has Bloodfest here.
I wish my middle name was the man.
We can add that.
Good.
Anyways, guys. So, again, thank you for joining us. If you listen to Shockwaves, you know how we like to start. We usually talk about what we're watching, what we're excited about. So I'm actually going to open the floor to you guys. And, I mean, I could ramble about some of the films I've been watching over the last week, but is there anything that you guys have seen lately that's gotten you excited, horror-wise?
You know, horror's just been getting some more love recently because of what happened, you know, with Guillermo winning, you know, for The Shape of Water, and so many cool movies have come out. Get Out, we're just getting more respect now, and I love that. And you know, I can't wait to see Jen's movie. I appreciate that more women are getting the chance to direct things, and so that's a positive move. And Fangoria is back, so oh my god, we have a new foundation from which to launch a lot more cool movies that you all want to see. And I just feel like our community is stronger than ever.
Yeah. Where do you think that's coming from?
I think filmmakers are realizing, I've seen things change over the years. It used to be that if you were in a comedy, you were in a comedy. If you were in a drama, you were in a drama. And now more filmmakers are writing stories, really good stories, that seem to marry a lot of different genres, and people aren't afraid to do that and take that risk. And, you know, everybody talks about elevated horror and what a stupid title that is. And I kind of agree. I think people are just getting smarter and telling better stories.
Yeah. Jen, what are your thoughts on elevated horror? Have you ever used that term to describe any film that you're pitching?
Only like movies that take place in elevators. I think elevated horror has been a thing for a very long time. And I mean, for a while now, I mean, in terms of the way we use it in industry terms, I think for a while now people have been talking about elevated horror, but really like throughout film history, elevated horror has been a thing. There's so many nicknames for it now, mm-hmm. besides elevated horror, like post-horror and death wave.
Death wave?
Yeah.
Owen, want to chime in on this one?
An elevated horror? I'm a short man, so I don't think about things that are high. I'm with you. Like, when I first heard the term elevated horror, I was like, oh, yeah, this is perfect, because I kind of dug it. It's like, yeah, horror that does something. I'm like, well, what do I want a horror movie to do? I'm like, oh, to scare me and really entertain me. I'm like, well, that's just horror.
That's just good horror.
Just good horror.
Yeah.
Or just good storytelling.
Yeah, just good storytelling, right.
It is exciting, as Barbara said, that, you know, now, like, we have the Oscars are respecting horror, as they always should have and sometimes did, but with Get Out.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. yeah.
But what's cool now, too, is, like, you know, when Friedkin won for The Exorcist, like, The Exorcist, he was like, well, that's not a horror movie. And he famously said, oh, The Exorcist is not a horror movie. It won Academy Awards, as if that was evidence that it could not have been a genre film.
Yeah.
Where now, it's like, oh, no, Get Out, that's a horror movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's say it boggles my mind to see in the Twitter space people who are trying to say that The Quiet Place is not a horror movie.
Yeah.
It is not a horror movie. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There is a 6-year-old boy who's dragged across concrete with his arm chopped off in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Yeah. That's not horror.
Well, I think people are also doing away with the tropes that we all know, and they are telling more intelligent stories. And so, you know, you also, I think as a performer, I want to point out that when I do any kind of movie, I mostly do horror movies. I mean, I love horror movies. I've rededicated myself to horror movies since I came back a number of years ago with Your Next. But I want to tell you that when I do a horror movie, I don't think I'm in a horror movie. I have to act like a horror movie actress character in this story. You have to play the truth of the moment, and there's some maybe terrible things that are going to happen, maybe scary things that are going to happen. And if you play the truth of it, whatever the director or the writer wants to impart on his story, if you tell the truth of the moment well enough, it's going to come through. And again, I just want to point out that everybody's just, you know, telling better stories, and everybody's, you know, this community of horror also in LA, and you're part of this, and you guys know, everybody feels like they're part of a community. And when I was making movies back in the 80s, you didn't give your script to somebody for notes. You didn't give your rough cut to all your best friends to come over and watch in your living room and say, this works, this doesn't work. Maybe you need a scene here, maybe you need something here. Now people are really vocal about helping one another and being supportive of one another, and I think that just makes our community stronger.
Yeah, I see there's a movement on Instagram now for horror t-shirt companies and collectibles, and they've got this kind of initiative to help one another. I forgot what it's called, but it's like two monster hands fist bumping each other. And it's like, we share, you share. And it's like, okay, I love that. I love that there's no animosity or competition. It's just everybody helping each other out. There's, you know, when you look at the kind of collectible space, there's NECA, there's Mezco, there's, you know, and they all just support one another, even with the t-shirt companies now too. But here's the thing, I was thinking about this the other day. Horror used to be, you know, the kind of a beacon for outsiders and misfits and more punk rock and you know, kind of counterculture, and today it's a little bit more mainstream. Can you guys kind of speak to it becoming more mainstream, and is there a fear that it's going to push it into something that's not as appealing to horror fans as it once was? And say, when I was growing up in 85 and I was, you know, drooling over you know, a picture of Bub in Fangoria going, oh yeah, man, it's going to be awesome, and looking at Greg, you know, Greg Nicotero's intestines spilling out onto the ground, and, you know, there's that's become mainstream now. People, thanks to The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead has made zombies and gore mainstream. But can it go too far to the point where it doesn't feel punk rock or counterculture or, you know, a kind of a beacon for us anymore?
Dude, what a good question. There's a weird thing, you know, horror always did this thing where it would, especially like 70s and 80s horror, where it invaded a place that was considered safe and proved that it wasn't safe. So like a summer camp, that's safe. You know, suburbia, there's nothing wrong. And so what, Michael Myers? Or your dreams, the safest place you could be. No one's going to hurt you in your dreams. And so it always dismantles like the fiction of safety. And maybe we come to a place where maybe horror becomes safe, right? So horror movies like, oh no, it's safe, zombie and gores. Like, it's no longer, like, you see Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and one of the reasons Texas Chainsaw Massacre is still so fucking scary is because you don't trust the filmmakers exactly. You're like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And he could show me something that I don't want to see. I think horror movies are still doing that. Yeah. There's going to be the ones that don't. There's going to be the Hollywood, you know, sort of cleaner version. That's always going to happen. But there's always going to be other horror movies that they're going to pick up an iPhone and make something subversive, and it's going to freak us out.
Truthfully, I don't trust people who don't like horror movies. So I think it's good. I feel like people should watch horror movies and should be aware and freaked out by things, because then I think maybe they spend a little bit more time thinking about things before they act. And I think we need more of that in our society right now.
Yeah. Cool. I think things ebb and flow, and you know, flavors of ice cream come and go, and you're into, you know, eating kale and then not kale and then Brussels sprouts. And right now horror's kind of in, and everybody wants in, and you know, a lot of the big studios right now are making kind of cool movies, and they're looking at us again as not the ugly stepchild, so that's good for all of us. And there'll be a time when we're not in it, you know, again, probably, but I think it's a great time for us, and I think there'll always be stories to tell. I think depending on the current culture and technology and what people are into and, you know, just what the zeitgeist is in society, we're always going to be able to tell horror movie stories. And I don't think we'll get watered down by the big studios doing the movies. I think there's there's just so much to mine, and I see a lot of psychological horror coming out, and we still have a long way to go in the mind, and, you know, as Pretorius once said very famously, it's in the mind. It's in the mind. So, anyway, I think we're all good now.
That's a great quote. So I like, horror is kale, is the, when I walk away.
Horror is kale.
Horror is kale.
Well, I just get concerned. I mean, obviously, I'm in a different position on the food chain of you know, how horror films get made. I just always want to make sure that there is an opportunity for an angry filmmaker to tell the next Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
I always want to make sure that there is a an avenue for someone to come out with a Henry portrait of a serial killer just to fuck people up.
Yeah.
I never want to see, obviously, those Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is not the type of movie Blumhouse makes, but I want to make sure that there are avenues, and I want to see exciting producers.
We're glad that you're there to do that.
Yeah, I want to see exciting producers come out and give opportunities to those filmmakers, because if there are no opportunities, then angry filmmakers cannot get their vision out there and tell something cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting right now because there is this like push for diversity, mm-hmm. which is bringing new stories to the forefront, and I think that that's something maybe the genre was feeling tired for a little bit, but now that, you know, industry-wide there's this push, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of interesting new things.
I think it's cool, too, like, you know, Barbara, you were saying, like, if the studios make some stuff, they're making some good stuff, but a lot of times, like, the studios are distributing it, you know, they're like, okay, oh, we'll take that. But it's almost like, it seems like almost impossible for them to make like a movie below 5 million or, you know, below a million. Like a studio just can't, they don't know how to do that.
Right.
So it is like people like Blumhouse and other folks who are doing that. They're like saying like, you're going to make, a better Halloween under 10 million than you are for, you know, 100 million. It's just going to be that better kind of film, because that's what it wants.
Well,
what
and you want one person's vision too, and you get, you know, once you go to the big studios, there's so many executives involved, and different people have different feelings about the trajectory of, you know, the movie and how it should go, and just putting it together. And I, that's the thing about the young angry filmmakers, and spending less money. You don't have people breathing down your neck, and you can get your vision across. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I hope we always have those people. I think we will. It's kind of easy to make a movie now. You just, you know, you need a little bit of money. It's digital, and it's just putting it together and a voice. You have to have a strong vision and a voice. And I don't know, just this going off the rails a little bit, but I feel like the best stories to me are kind of more simple, like tell a story but don't muddy it up with a lot of things. And maybe that's what the big studios get wrong sometimes, is that there's too many stories being told in 1 2-hour space or 90 minutes. You know, tell a simple story but tell it well.
Well, I think it's a kind of a what's the bigger picture mentality right now that they can explore. You know, it's okay, we're gonna maybe tell this remake, but what other mythology can we layer in there, because we're thinking about, oh, the TV show or the sequels. And it's, you know, for us, we never really think about the sequels until after the movie comes out. But you know, I think, do you think that TV is having an effect on the genre in terms of the theatrical space too, and in terms of feature films, the way people consume horror films?
Well, TV's in, right? I mean, we have some great shows on TV now, and you know, everybody wants to work in TV. Also, there's more money in TV. We're not, you know, a lot of filmmakers just making these low-budget independent movies. They're not making a lot of money, and there's piracy out there, and that's an issue. But on TV, you're paid a lot better, and you know, you have longevity, and people aren't pirating it. They're signing up for $15, you know, a month or something. So yeah. You're saying, ugh, you don't like that.
No, I hate piracy.
Oh, yeah,
I'm here at Overlook, someone left a comment under my unfriended dark web, and it was like, hey, I'm trying to find it on the torrents. Can you help me out? Where's Susco? Susco here? I mean, like, what the fuck is that? Don't hit me up to find out how you can bootleg our movie.
Yeah, I don't know what the future for all these young filmmakers is like. It's kind of like years ago you used to you'd make a movie, and it would do pretty well, and you'd do another movie, and you'd get a little bit better, and then you'd do another movie a year later and get a little bit better. And now, you put one movie out, and if you don't hit it out of the park, you're not going to get asked by a studio or whatever. You're not going to get, you know, a TV interview. And if you just keep going making these little low-budget horror movies, it's hard to build up a career and sustain yourself financially. So that's a problem for a lot of young filmmakers. And I don't know, I worry about that for the young people. I'm not in this business right now to make money. It's nice to get a paycheck, but I'm doing it because I love it and it's creative and I'm passionate about it and I love the horror genre. But I feel bad for people who are just starting out. And I think people who are, you've got to hit it out of the park. You've got to, you know, make a great fucking movie and hopefully come back and, you know, somebody else will give you money to make another thing. But again, on your second movie, are you going to, you can't stop the piracy from that? Or are you going to, you know, make any money? It's a tragic problem. And a lot of people don't even want to talk about it. Because they think, let's not talk about the negative, you know, let's just do our art and move on. But it, you know, it's really something that plagues me and really bothers me.
It is super hard. It is hard to make money, not just for young people, for me people. But there is something, someone was saying something that's about books. I heard this publisher say, it's not enough to be published, you have to be published well. And maybe that's true with movies right now. Like, it's not enough to make a movie. You have to make a goddamn beautiful, good movie. And that doesn't mean a movie that is free of flaws. Make your, you know, flawed movies are some of my favorite movies. But there is so much on TV, films, streaming. I mean, there's so much out there that if you're going to make a movie, it's not enough to, like, go, but look, this is a pretty good movie. This is pretty good. Like, it's almost as good as I Know What You Did Last Summer. And go, okay, we should make that. Like, it's, you've got to do something that's voice. Like you guys said, it's got to have voice. It's got to be something that is its own distinct thing that no one else is making and that someone's going to read and go, oh, I would pay money to have this film so I can watch it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're beholden to those who are going to be distributing the film and how they're going to market it. You know, and when they market it, they got to find the hook within your film. If they can't find a hook or some sort of marketing tool within your film, then it becomes incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
But Jen, I mean, like for you, I mean, you've been on the producing side and now you're on the directing side. For you, are you going to set the producing side on the back burner and forge ahead with the directing career now? I mean, and what are your fears and what are your goals for it?
I love directing so much. It's like, definitely this whole process of shooting The Ranger, I've just felt like I've been in heaven the entire time since pre-production. I also like producing because I like working with other filmmakers and you learn a lot by watching other directors. So it's certainly, I want to keep producing, but I also want to keep directing, and I don't think it's the kind of thing that you have to choose one or the other. Like, I think that, I just want to embrace all of it.
Yeah, and maybe that's the trick too, is to just kind of do everything, and that's what people are doing today. Like back in the 80s, you know, I just did my acting gig and I came in and that was it. And now everybody's producing, directing, acting, and everybody can do each other's jobs. So maybe, you know, that's the way you do it after 30 years of doing this job and this job and this movie and that movie and maybe a TV thing and maybe a little thing in a studio movie and a lot of little movies, you finally look back and you say, I've had a career.
Everybody has to wear. I think you begin wearing a lot of hats and then it kind of gets distilled into one focus and then you just get really great at that one thing. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
For me, that's craft services.
Yeah, craft services.
Better at that.
I feel like I'm going the other way because I feel like I started with acting and now I'm learning about other stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of branching out into producing a little bit and, you know, I don't really write, except I rewrite my own dialogue a lot. If they let me, I've gotten pretty good at that.
Yeah. It's just something I've been seeing a lot of too, is that a lot of people who are getting into film and especially the horror community, industry, I mean, I say, what do you want to do? And they're like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, you got to find something. Like, I know you love horror and I can tell that you love the genre and you want to do something, but I really think you have to find that one focus. You know, start as a PA, obviously, but like if you want to write, start writing. if you want to direct, start directing. But the I don't know is not a good answer. in terms of, I just want to kind of go back. One of the questions we love to talk about is, what's the one thing that got you fascinated and excited about the horror industry? And Owen, we can start with you.
Oh man, that's such a great question. I think I had like two things basically. When I was a kid, I like black and white television. There was color television when I was a kid. I'm 104 years old. But when I was a kid, like I remember like The Fly and Night of the Living Dead, seeing both of those on TV. And Night of the Living Dead terrified me as a kid. I saw it, I was like, oh, you know, it's a black and white kind of cheesy zombie flick, right? And I think at that point I'd already seen like Return of the Living Dead. But for whatever, when the daughter stabs, you know, with the spoiler, that just killed me, and the ending killed me. And I think actually that same night I accidentally overheard my parents having sex and thought it was zombies. I'm pretty sure. It was like this weird thing of hearing moaning and going, oh, and it was like double horror. So I think for me that was the moment. and then combined that with, I watched Halloween 4. And for whatever reason, I just love Halloween 4. There's so much I love about that movie. And I think those two movies, I was like, oh my God, you're allowed to do this. It seemed like the idea that people were allowed to do that. I was like, oh yeah, sign me up.
Jen?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been into like spooky stuff. I think I saw The Crafts when I was like 9 or 10 years old. And then I would like try to get all my friends to go and hang out in the graveyard with me after school. And I was like that girl that would try to convince her friends to do that. And then also around that age, I saw Scream, and I know you did Last Summer and all those movies, and that really like opened the doorway, and then I became obsessed, and then throughout my teenage years was just trying to see as much horror as possible instead of having friends at school. But then it was really cool. I was in college, and I got an internship at a company called FearNet, which is a horror TV channel, and that turned into a marketing job. And I was there like 4 years, and that was the first thing that was like, oh wow, this is like, horror is an industry, and I can just like work in this, and I can just like get a paycheck from this. This is so cool. And then like from then on, I just didn't want to do anything else.
I don't remember SphereNet.
Yeah.
Yeah, Heather's in the back. Yes.
And then you went to work at Glass Eye Picks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Larry.
Yeah. So then I moved to New York. And I stalked Larry Fessenden until he gave me a job at Glass Eye, and that's where I am now.
And what did you pick up from Larry instantly? What did you just get from him?
When I first met him, he was very drunk. It was his Christmas party. And that was, yeah, I mean, I pitched myself to Larry Fessenden and Peter Polk in the middle of a party when everybody was out of it, and that's a great way to get a job. It was cool at FearNet. I learned all about marketing and, you know, talking about horror to the public and stuff. And then at Glass Eye, I learned how to make movies. I learned how to produce under Larry and Peter Polk, and then I was, you know, watching Larry and just hearing how he talks about film when he's directing and everything, and just started, you know, making all these mental cues, and eventually brought the script of The Ranger to him and said I wanted to direct it.
Cool.
Barbara, what about you?
Well, you know, unlike a lot of you here, I didn't grow up with a passion to be involved with horror movies. However, when I was younger, I did watch The Outer Limits and, you know, those kinds of shows on TV, and, you know, I have an early memory of what's her name with the Trilogy of Terror?
Karen Black.
Karen Black, yeah. Of watching that and being, wow, overwhelmed by that. And when I was 13, I saw The Exorcist, and I saw it with a bunch of friends, and I was really scared, and I left in the middle of the movie because it was still light out, and I didn't want to walk back in the dark, so I didn't see the movie. The whole way through until about 10 years later. But, you know, as an actress, I just auditioned for a lot of different things when I first came to Hollywood, and I, you know, was lucky enough to be cast in Reanimator and get that job after the original girl dropped out because her mother read the script and she said, oh, you're not doing this. You know, we were young at that time, like in our early 20s, and I didn't have as much adult supervision over me. So I just went ahead and did the movie. I was like, cool. And I love the script. And then I just started working with Stuart, and I kind of got introduced to the horror genre, but I really didn't know a lot. I mean, I wasn't a total fan of the genre. I didn't know what I was getting into. And
did Stuart help you turn that around?
It really wasn't even at that time. I'll tell you the time that I, reinvested myself in the genre and in horror specifically was when I had retired and I was living as I am now in San Francisco and taking care of my family and my kids. And I got a text on my phone from my agent, who I was really glad he hadn't lost my number because I hadn't worked in like 6 or 7 years. And he said, oh, I got a call for you to be in this new movie called You're Next, and would you read the script? And I said, who wants me to be in a movie? And who are these people? And really, people remember me? I read the script, and I thought it was really well done and, you know, nicely written. And it was a nice little part. And I thought, wow, you know, motherhood's really hard. I had 2 little kids at the time, and acting's really fun. So I'll take a break from what I'm doing, and I'll go and do this movie. And then it was an epiphany for me working on that set. It was explosive. The talent on that movie was insane. And, you know, from Simon Barrett writing the script and coming up to me in the middle of a scene and saying, is there something else you'd like to say? Do you like what you're saying? Nobody'd ever asked me that before on a movie set. And, you know, Adam Wingard kind of grabbing the camera from our DP and saying, wow, I see a moment happening over here. I'm just gonna shoot this. And then, you know, working with AJ Bowen and how fluid he is as an actor and so in the moment and so real. And Amy Simons and Ty West, I mean, everybody who worked on that movie was so inspiring to me that I think at that moment coming back from that movie, I went, I want to do this again. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to movies. I want to work again. I really had retired. I wasn't, you know, I was just being a mom. And after doing that movie, even before it came out, and it was a long time before it came out, like 2 years it sat on a shelf, because I think Summit and Lionsgate were merging at the time that they bought the movie. And, you know, it was painful to wait for so long for all of them and, you know, a little bit for me. But after doing the movie, I said to my agent, Mike, I said, Mike, I really want to do this again, so I'm glad you didn't lose my number. Please keep calling me. And I said, I just want to do it again. So I started reinvesting myself and going to film festivals and meeting people like Ryan and, you know.
Just, we're glad you're back.
Yeah, and we're like all you guys who were, you know, at the time, yeah. You were, you know, interviewing people and, you know, and I just realized it was the community and meeting everybody. And that's the time when I went, wow. And another funny thing was, like, Simon Barrett said to me, now that you've done this movie, you know, the only way we're all going to keep in touch with you is if you join Twitter and Facebook, and you're not on any of that. And I said, oh, you mean you're not going to call me and we're not going to have a chat? And he said, no, Barbara, we don't do that anymore. I was like, oh, damn, okay. I got to join these social media sites. So then I did, and everything, the world opened up for me, and horror opened up for me, and that's when I dedicated my life back to it, was then.
Nice. And I'm curious, this is a question for both you and Owen. You both respectively have families. Has having a family altered or shaped your view on horror at all? Because I've run into many people over the years who, you know, were that kind of punk rock kid wearing the Dawn of the Dead shirt, and then they grew up and they got older and then they got, families, and they're like, oh, I can't watch this hardcore stuff anymore. Like, there was, I'm not going to name this person, but there was somebody in front of me last night during Puppet Master, and there's some pretty gnarly stuff in Puppet Master. Anybody at Puppet Master last night?
Oh, so good.
Yeah, there's some pretty purple stuff in that movie, and I could just see him shrinking because there was just so much nasty bits.
He was there with his kid?
No, he wasn't there with his kid, but I know it was rattling around in his brain.
Yeah.
But has that changed at all? I mean, like, has having a family shaped you guys at all?
So, yeah, I mean, you know what, I was never like a Dawn of the Dead, like, t-shirt wearing guy, like, I was never that guy.
We were just
like,
talking about myself.
But, but, you know, it's funny, like, my kids, I definitely, like, we have a tiny little house, so if I'm going to, like, watch even, like, the new Twin Peaks, I'm like, okay, it's part 8. I'm going to, like, turn down the volume and wait for all the kids to be asleep before I watch this scary shit. But my kids kind of have gotten into it with me a little bit, so it's funny, my 9-year-old loves to talk to me about Freddy Krueger. And he's like, okay, wait. Does he only kill in dreams? Didn't you say in episode 2, in the second film, that he's at a pool party or something? I'm like, ah, I don't know if that's canon. But he's never seen any of the movies. He's never seen any of them, but somehow, like, he kind of is already there in them. And so we kind of talk about it. And when I make a movie, because it takes so much time and you're sort of sacrificing so much family time, I always find a way, and it's also cheap, to have my kids in it somewhere, like body doubles or doing something, and I don't pay them. And my wife too. So like in Bloodfest, they're all killer clowns. And that sort of helps. But they're kind of into it. And it's I love these stories of like what Jan was talking about, of like how we horror makes you think about things that maybe you don't want to think about. And my kids are already aware. When my daughter was marching and walked out of school on Friday, she's a 13-year-old, and she walked out of school with so many other wearing a shirt saying, we're walking out today so we don't have to run out tomorrow. And she's like aware, like, you know what, a killer puppet is not what she's scared of. What she's scared of is the actual horrors in our American country, our country right now. But a way that she can play with that horror, a way she can sort of encounter her own fear and mortality, which she knows about, and it's foolish to say it doesn't exist, mortality, is to watch a horror movie. And that's what I did. When I watched Michael Myers, didn't matter what you did, didn't matter how smart you were or how fast you ran or whatever, this guy would walk and somehow end up in front of you. And that's death, right? So it means like, oh shit, you get off your couch and live, because eventually, no matter what you do, best life ever, you still die. And so I love my kids kind of getting into horror. Oscar has to wait till he's 13 to watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Because that one gets really dumb. But I find it, for me, I want to make it more fun, but I also, like, I realize the stakes. Life has never been scarier for me when I had kids, because I'm so much more scared of something happening to them than something happened to me. And in that way, I was like, okay, let me examine that, because that's probably where I'm going to find my nightmares, and that's what will inspire my scripts.
Really quick, Jen, for you, I mean, growing up a youthful horror fan, for you, what were you tapping into? Was it just the kind of, again, going back to the kind of mystic quality, or was it an outlet to just get frustration? What was it for you that made you want to get into it?
Yeah, I everything that Owen's saying rings true for me from when I was a kid. I don't know, I think I was a very, like, anxious child and very scared of things, and I think I'm still very scared of a lot of things in this world. And horror is an outlet. Horror is a way for you to face the scary thing without actually having to face the scary thing, to, like, go on the roller coaster without, you know, really going on. So, it's just something I poured my anxieties into.
And applying that to The Ranger?
Yes. Well, The Ranger, it kind of combines a lot of things for me. Like, I really want to take the movie and put all my favorite things into it, but also there's the main character, Chelsea, and it's kind of following her as she's, you know, interacting with these, like, larger-than-life characters, and she's just trying to, like, figure herself out while all these people are trying to tell her what to do and who to be, and that was certainly something I was, like, struggling with and pouring into the script, you know, while I was writing it. That comes from my own experiences.
on Bloodfest, Owen, which
yes, Ryan.
Feels like a giant celebration of all things that you love.
Yeah.
Just talk about how, you know, kind of, just talk about the inspiration for you. I mean, like, I you're a filmmaker, and this has, and I've seen some of the other stuff that you've been working on, but this has a lot of scope to it. What made you want to write something like Bloodfest, and was it just, it's scary, and there's jump scares, but it's also just a big funhouse ride.
Yeah, it feels to me like Goonies with blood.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's more fun than than terrifying, I think. So I worked with the Alamo Drafthouse for a long, long time now. Yeah. And one of the things they do that I love, and actually that Overlook does as well, is this idea of the movie bleeding off the screen. So they'll show a screening of Jaws on a big outdoor screening and have people in inner tubes on a lake watching it. And then they hire scuba divers to swim and pull people's legs at just the right moment. And they do stuff like that. And I started dreaming, like, oh my gosh, I'd love it if they would have a huge festival and then make all these little worlds that you could go to. So you could go into a zombie genre world and explore it. And you could go into the haunted asylum and you could move around. There's a summer camp in the right-hand corner of the grounds. And I would want to go there. And then I started thinking, like, well, what would be the most horrible thing that would happen there? I also love I think I read Ernie Klein's Ready Player One, and I was like, oh, it's so funny, this trivia that we know, these rules that we're aware of that we don't really think about. Like, in horror, my son knows how to kill a zombie, but he's never seen any George Romero movie, but he knows. We just kind of, they've become our modern mythology.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, let's play around with that modern mythology that we all kind of know and explore that. So it was a blast.
Well, Barbara, how did you get roped into the new Puppet Master film that debuted last night?
Wow, I just was the luckiest girl on the planet, I guess. I don't know.
I see.
How did I get roped into that? Well, I got a call again from my agent, and it came out of the blue from Dallas Sonye, who owns CineState, and they put out Brawl and Cell Block 99 and... Bone Tomahawk. I had seen Bone Tomahawk and I really loved it. So the call came out of the blue when they asked me to be in it. And, you know, they'd already cast a lot of the other people. Tom Lennon was in it. And I didn't know Jenny, but I knew who Nelson Franklin was and Charlene Yee and Michael Paré was in it. And I've always wanted to be in a movie with Michael Paré. And I'd wondered why I hadn't been. Because it'd been, you know, so long that we've both been in this business. We're exactly the same age. And we kind of grew up in the business together. And it was just offered to me, and I thought, and I read the script, and the script was so good. Craig Zoller is an amazing writer, and I had a fun character, and I said, wow, this will be fun. So that was just it.
Yeah, I feel like after watching it last night, Zoller has a very Tarantino-esque kind of rhythm to his dialogue. I don't know if you might have picked that up in Brawl and Cell Block 9. And I feel like this is his From Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tarantino broke off and did a little horror movie with Robert Rodriguez and let somebody else direct it. And here's Zoller writing his balls to the wall, remorseless, goofy, fun horror movie. And then he had somebody else direct it. So maybe this is his like career path.
Yeah. Yeah, he had some people, you know, they picked some guys that... are real hardcore horror fans, and they directed a movie called Wither that was pretty visceral, and that they wanted to marry those two worlds together, you know, comedy and horror. And Reanimator is a comedy horror, and I think it's hard to get those right, and sometimes they're like too funny, but I think the tone of this with everybody who worked on it, it seemed to really work. The horror elements are there, and there's, you know, moments of levity and humor, but it's horror first and comedy second, and it works for this movie. I don't know how you do that well. It's just, you know, again, it comes from the vision of the filmmaker and the writer and whatever. I mean, when it's wrong, you know it's wrong, and when it's right, you know, you're relaxed watching the film, so... I hope it worked. Anyway, I was really happy to be in the very first Puppet Master and then the very latest.
Yeah, yeah. I've always said that, you know, when people ask if I ever want to do comedies or dramas or anything, I'm like, no, this is it. It's going to be horror for the rest of my life, all the time. you know, I don't mind.
So from a very young age, that's it for you.
Yeah. That's it. I don't want to do. I mean, like, there are no cool drama conventions. You know, it's not like you're going to like a, you know, you're not going into a on Golden Pond panel, or you know, Kramer versus Kramer signing. You know, horror is the thing, and I, you know, that's it. I'm gonna live in this world for better or for worse. And for you guys, you know, is this something that, you know, Barbara, for you, you're back, obviously as an actress, do you want to, are there other avenues you want to explore, or is the genre the one thing that you want to kind of keep taking opportunities within? Is there anything else that you know, are you finding, are there other roles that you want to play that you've never been given the opportunity to do?
People are offering me stuff, and I'm trying to take roles that don't repeat things and are different than what I've played before. And basically, you know, you sort of wait around for that stuff. It happens, and then it doesn't happen for a very long time. I mean, most of the time when you're working, you're not working that much. You're living your life and hanging out with your family and doing regular chores every day. But as far as working in the genre, I think I want to produce a little bit more.
Nice.
I really like that. I like helping young filmmakers. I like lifting other people up. I feel like that's, you know, a skill that I have to, you know, look at something and help you realize your vision and what you want to do. And I was never really interested in directing. I'm more of a dabbler, and acting is like dabbling. And I think, you know, I've only really produced one thing that I was so active in, Beyond the Gates, and, you know, supposed to do more of that. But I feel like if you direct a movie, wow, hats off to you guys, because my other panel mates here, because you have to dedicate a couple of years of your life to that. And I like kind of coming and going and things. So, just a little bit here and a little bit there is good for me.
Nice. And Jen and Owen, does the horror own you, or are you guys going to break off at some point?
It owns me.
Yeah!
I started out in comedy, you know, my first screenwriting stuff. And my novels, I write novels that they're not horror novels. And then in comedy, I had...
Wait. I just learned about this recently. Owen, tell us about what you write.
The novels?
Yes, please.
So they're like literary novels. Like I wrote like The Book of Harold, The Illegitimate Son of God, and Hall. They're like, they're like in the Vonnegut sort of world. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that you do that.
It's really, yeah, it's weird. They're not like my movie stuff at all, which is strange. And then I started writing comedies, and I found myself not interested. I wouldn't want to see the scripts, these movies made necessarily. Not that there, I was like, oh, this is bad. I was like, when I got home, I don't want to watch Wedding Crashers. You know, like I want to watch the new Puppet Master. You know, or Hellraiser 2, or something like that. And I was like, my living was, you know, writing these comedies, summer studio blockbuster type things, or working on those scripts and having a blast doing it. It was really, really fun. But at some point, I was like, I didn't think I was cool enough to write horror. I was like, I'd love to write horror. I'm just not cool enough. I just couldn't do it. And I don't know at what point I was just like, I think, you know, there was an animated movie that I had written on, and it did pretty well. And I watched it in the theater. I was like, hey, and I just like, I don't feel proud, which is a really weird feeling. I was like, I don't feel proud. I was like, if I'm gonna do this, I better write the kind of movies I want to watch. And then I started thinking, I want to be more involved, and no one's going to ask me to direct. No one's going to do that. So it's like, what if I wrote a script and sort of demanded that I direct? And so I started doing that, and I love it. I don't know what will come next. Musicals?
Yeah.
but I don't know. But right now, man, it's too fun. I mean, I just sort of pinch myself again and again, like, just because I'm into that. But also to wake up, because I'm like, what a dream that I get to be hanging out with you guys in New Orleans and up here, come on, making horror movies? How much fun is that? That is just too fun.
And book shopping.
And, I spend a lot of time.
Like all the books. Yeah, all the books.
There's some good bookstores in town.
Yeah. I'm going to open this up to questions. Do you guys have any questions that you want to throw to our panelists? Anyone? Yeah, right here.
Barbara. How was the interview when you went and talked to Stuart Gordon about doing the part in The Enemy? Just because I remember seeing, first of all, you're like the super iconic person to us that saw Reanimator. I saw it when I was 7, hiding.
Wow!
I was watching it on HBO, for instance. And I remember when I was in grammar school, I told my friends, like, dude, you gotta sneak into your parents' room when they're not watching, you know, and watch this movie called Reanimator. It's fucking nuts. And then the next day, they asked me, like, what happens? Like, no, just watch it. The next day, they come in, like, dude, oh my God, that thing was crazy. It was so awesome, you know? And then as I got older, and then the Arrow release came out a few years ago, and then I started realizing, like, no, I wonder, how was that interview like, just to say, like, this is what happens in this movie, and this is what you're doing?
Yeah, in case our listeners can't hear, the gentleman is asking, you know, what was the interview like when I got the part in Reanimator? And I have to say, there was no real interview. I mean, I was a young actress, and I came in for an audition. So nobody was asking me a lot of questions. I was saying the lines as best as I could to get the job. And when I came in for the audition, Bruce and Jeffrey already had the parts. I didn't realize that. There was a few girls out there. There weren't any other guys. But they were so good in their parts when I was reading with them. I was thinking to myself, I hope they get the job because they're really good. And I didn't know they already had the job. And I enjoyed working with them in the audition process. But as far as like what I think you're really asking, I mean, you know, what my character had to do in Reanimator was pretty exploitive and pretty out there, and there were some crazy things in the movie, and you know, that one scene in particular was pretty crazy. I'm a really open person. I grew up on a carnival lot. My dad was a concessionaire with fairs and carnivals. I've seen it all. I've seen it all from when I was little. I mean, you saw Reanimator when you were 7. That's too young. But you know, I grew up on a carnival lot, and I've seen a lot of stuff. I've seen the fringe of society. You know, traveling with nowhere to go, homeless people from when I was younger, you know, just hooking on to the world of the carnivals and traveling with them. I've seen gypsies who didn't go to school, who were my best friends, who I was working with. I mean, this was, you know, 50 years ago. I was hanging out with gypsy kids that didn't go to school. So I wasn't fazed by doing that scene or being Meg in that movie. I thought the script was great. Of course, I was nervous about my part and, you know, being in that scene. And maybe it's, you know, in a lot of early slasher movies, it's kind of a rite of passage for the girl to take her top off. And, you know, we've all seen that. But thank God the movie was as good as it was. Because if I had done that scene or been in that movie and that movie sucked, it would have been harder for me, and I'll be honest, as an actress, as a woman, to go on and make other really good movies. If it was terrible, I would have been the girl that took her top off or did worse and didn't get asked to do anything else. So we all know that, right? And as, you know, a woman now, what I know, what I went through, and you know, kind of veering into a little producing, you know, we've got to give our ladies a lot of respect, and we've got to lift them up and give them scenes that aren't just about that. And I think we all agree now, and we're all smarter. We don't do that anymore. You know, we're making smarter choices. We're giving people good scenes. And when I even read, you know, this is veering off, but when I read a script and I'm talking to a writer or a director, I'll say, you know, this character doesn't have enough to do in the movie. You've got to give them a bigger moment. And, you know, I was given some bigger moments within those exploitive moments. So thank God I survived that. But I might not have.
Over here.
Just extend that statement. Are there any tropes in the horror genres that are particular turnoffs, or just are like, no, that's just not my thing, or if you don't want to be negative about it, is there anything that really hooks you in horror trope wise, or you're just like a sucker for that kind, that subgenre of horror or anything like that?
Tropes that turn you off and things that hook you.
That's a great question. I'm trying to think. I mean, there are definitely things. I mean, I think what Barbara said is it was so good. That was really great to hear everything you just said there. And it is so true. I think everything you're saying. There are definitely tropes that we experienced in those horror movies of the past. I don't know if anything like I'm trying to think of anything that really, really turns me off right now. I think maybe there's just a level of respect. You know, I think sometimes you can find a storyteller has respect for their characters and respect for the audience. I think what I don't appreciate, maybe it's this, when a filmmaker just kicks you in the teeth, like it says, "Aha, you cared about this. Screw you." That's when it's just cruel. You know, I think sometimes when all a filmmaker has to say is, "Hey, the world is shit, and I'm going to show you it in all these different ways, and every person in it is shit, and they're all going to die horribly." I'm like, well, I don't need to see. No thanks. I don't want to see that. And there's definitely been those kind of horror movies. But I think when horror movies make us in love with life and in love with these characters, even as they're getting mutilated, then that's probably what hooks me. I think horror movies should be life-affirming.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Horror is kale.
Yeah, you know, horror is the new Brussels sprout. But I think so many horrible things happen in horror, but like everybody was saying, you confront your fear and all that, and it makes it a little bit easier to digest the Brussels sprout. But I think the horror community is some of the most just in our psyches, we're not kooky or crazy because we've seen it all and we've confronted it all. But yeah, as far as those horror tropes and things, yeah, just having respect for the audience, like you're saying, and being life affirming, even though mostly we're dealing with death. The best horror movies for me are the ones that do lift people up and do give you hope and help you see humanity in a different way, and you know, in a full way.
What do you think, Jen?
In terms of, I agree with everything that they're saying. Horror is life-affirming. Yes, that's why I love it. I think in terms of tropes, I'm really attracted to movies that take these tropes we've seen over and over and do something new with it and subvert them. And when a movie does that and it's satisfying, it's just, like, for me, the best thing ever.
Yeah, I think we definitely live in a world in which I feel like there is so much content and so much exposure to film and television and web shows. We've seen everything. We're seeing the same stories over and over, and it's just really about how things are turned upside down and applied to new themes. I mean, you know, what Jordan did with Get Out.
Just Jordan, is it?
Yeah. You're in first name base.
Oh, God.
Jordan.
Yeah,
speed dial.
When I read Get Out, I was like, it's like Stepford Wives meets Society, and then I said, it's Stepford Wives meets Society. Everybody's like, what? The great thing that the movie makes you forget about is that it's a brain transplant movie.
Yeah.
You know, never mind the science behind it. It's a brain transplant movie. But what he applied on top of that layer was themes of race and relationships and all family dynamics and all that stuff. And that's what, I think that's what really, that's what disrupts the system is stories that are able to take things that are very familiar and just applying them to very timely topics or feelings, you know, emotion is everything.
Feelings.
Emotion is everything,
super
really.
Super important.
Yes.
Wait, what was the movie that just came out? John Krasinski?
Oh, Quiet Place.
Oh, so Quiet Place has a lot of similar tropes that we've seen in movies before. But the characterizations of the players, they're all really good actors. You know, you have to have that too, right? You have to have good actors, because a lot of times you read a great script and you then you see the movie on screen and then, you know, it just didn't get fulfilled. But there's the moments, you know, as a performer, there's the moments between the actors on screen that you see that can subvert those tropes and make you really care about the characters. And every great horror movie, I really think, has some basis and foundation in something that's real and something that you can connect to on a personal level. And if, you know, it's almost like you watch the players acting with one another, and sometimes it's not just the individual actor, it's the energy that's passed between them that you can really see and feel, and it's a visual thing on screen, and that's what breathes new life into, you know, every good horror movie.
I think that applies to you know, being a horror fan. You know, as I get older, I'm looking for things that I can connect to emotionally a little bit more. I think when I was younger, you know, when I was angry about pushing carts around Stop and Shop, House on the Edge of the Park was waiting for me at home, and I could just go, fuck yeah, fuck everybody, man. I want to watch David Hess messing people up at a party. Do I reach for those as much as I, you know, now, as much as I do then? Not so much. Every once in a while, I need to pop in House on the Edge of the Park, but then I'm reminded, I'm like, oh, okay, I've moved beyond
those
kind
of,
as a human, exactly. So, you know, but I'm not saying that there's no place for those movies. I think they are needed for sure, because the youth need an outlet for their anger and their frustration or whatever they're feeling. I just think that now more than ever, especially now I'm on the other side, it's like you need that emotional connective tissue whenever you tell a good horror story these days. You know, I mean, like, I'm hearing a lot of feedback from people who are now seeing Unfriended Dark Web, and it is incredibly darker than Unfriended, and it's probably one of the bleakest movies that we've made in a while. But, you know, through all of that, those bleak themes, and it's grounded in the real world, whereas Unfriended was more supernatural. You know, it was important to make sure that you liked all those characters and you liked what was going on with them. So when they all started dying, spoiler alert, you know, you felt something, you know. And I hear a lot of people coming out going, oh, I like that person, I like that person. Oh, I can't believe that person died, you know. But you have to see emotion in the beginning to make that really work.
Yeah, I think all good storytelling, and, you know, you guys hopefully can attest to this, it's about reminding us who we are, you know. And you get a feeling and a sense and a connection usually when you watch a movie, and you're left with something revealing about yourself or about the world or, you know, about others around you.
Yeah. I think we're gonna wrap on that note, guys. I just wanna thank all of you who came out to the Shockwaves Overlook Edition. If you are listening, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Barbara, Jen, Owen, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks to all of you who came out. Really appreciate it.